Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hello.
Good. Very, very Alan Rickman-esque of you.
Mr. Potter.
Good. I think I'm going to open with, I've gathered you today to pose a question. I want to know why we like terrible games. Now, you might say that some of these aren't terrible. We'll see how we go.
No, I'll just say instantly, why have you chosen me and Ash? Well, you immediately came up to us bounding over like a puppy and were just like, guys, I've got a great idea for a podcast. I won't tell you what the title is, and now here we are, and it all becomes clear.
Look, I'm not going to lie. I wanted an excuse to talk about Deadly Premonition. Now, Ash doesn't know what that is. Jules does.
Oh. So, I've heard of it. I've heard of Deadly Premonition. Like, my whole thing on bad games is that basically I take the time, I do my research, I pick out games.
Just pointing a finger.
I'm waving it, Ryan. I take the time.
The claws out.
I do the research. Uh-huh. I had the internet before I was 17, according to Jules Gill.
Listen.
Is this something Jules has revealed before we started recording?
What the hell, guys? Right, what happens before the podcast is literally my life. Do not air it on
literally your life.
Stop it now.
Well, I've used the internet for a great amount of time.
So yeah, we'll just let you try to figure out what that even means.
My choices, basically. So I spend the time playing good games like Evolve and Colonial Marines.
I was so close to nailing that point.
I was about to swear so loudly then.
But frick.
Flip off, Ash Roman. If I am to believe that you did anything with the internet other than type in Sly Raccoon bumhole.
Oh, no, if you just type in Sly Raccoon, it already comes up with a load of Evolve.
You
don't even have to search heart rate, but no, I don't. I know what Deadly Premonition is. Uh-huh. It's just not one that I've managed to play, but I've been told by you guys plenty of times that I should. So tell me about it.
It's a good time. Well, I'm going to get to some specifics in a bit, but I kind of want to just like talk about like what is it about games that like they don't have to be perfect. I think that like because something like Deadly Premonition or Evolve or Colonial Marines or whatever, like we kind of find ourselves going back to them. And I play a lot of, or I used to play a lot more of like 6 and 7 out of 10 games. Like as much as the industry needs to take forever with really long dev cycles and perfecting everything. For me, I don't know what it is. It's that, like, what do you guys think that it is that draws you to these games that are still very much 6 or 7 out of 10?
It's the same thing of, like, why do we watch movies that we know are, like, schlocky? Like, the entire grindhouse phenomenon that Tarantino and Rodriguez were, like, trying to champion for a while back in, was it, like, 2010, 2012, when they did Planet Terror? Terror Planet, whatever it was called?
Planet Terror, yeah. Planet Terror. And the other one.
Like, that sort of...
did Grindhouse as well.
Yeah.
And they did that one.
And yeah, that would have been the easier one for me to remember. But it's like those
probably
films
on the internet. That.
Those films never set out to be the cinematic classics, but they did it in a schlocky B movie way that was very enticing because there's something about like low quality but still with a ton of heart that really appeals to us on all mediums. It's like why in galleries, like outsider art at the moment is one of the most popular things going, which is strange considering its name, because of the fact it's people who don't have what you consider to be fine art, artistic talent showcasing stuff, but it's resonating with people because it's something that's real and heartfelt, I guess.
I think the whole point of it is that you want, I always go on about games as storytelling devices and that sort of thing. So I like a story, but like the whole point is that you want a good story. It doesn't really matter how it's delivered as long as you get the gist of it, which is what like bad B movies.
Gist.
The gist.
There you go.
The gif.
It's like gif and gifs all over again.
The ist.
Anyway.
My point. It's gone. As long as you're getting to the heart of a narrative and delivering an experience that people can relate to and have fun with, that's what matters. It doesn't matter the kind of vehicle it is driven in. So you can have like a real bad, horrible car, but as long as it's got a fun person in going, woo, here's some tunes on the radio.
Then the road trip will be just as good.
Yeah.
It is kind of like these games are like the punk, but it's almost like the grunge movement or something. It's like grunge proved to rock.
But we should state very clearly now that most of these games didn't actually start out by saying, hey, you know what we're going to aim for? The middle of the pack. Like they all were clearly set out to be like, we are going to try and really like knock this out of the park. Yet because of shortcomings, director choices, or just lack of funding, they had to make it so that it has this B-tier level quality.
It's like it's kind of like the Tommy Wiseau or like the Rooms of video games, where some of them like obviously aimed high and then they kind of didn't get high. But then after a while, it's been like, oh no, that was fun. That was totally what we meant the whole time.
I feel like the Room is wasn't so much he was aiming high; it's that he truly believes he hit high.
That's the worst thing about it. Have you seen any of his sort of like live? Because he goes around and tours with the Room, and he'll do Q&As afterwards. Mm-hmm. He genuinely believes that he has made a masterpiece, that everyone isn't laughing at him; that they're just going, "No, no, it's great. This is exactly what it." Because it's like, no, like I mean, I too would be laughing if I saw the absolute amount of bank money that he's making from doing this. But still, mad.
I think there's a way to sort of capitalize on those like fun little like imperfections and make it go. Mm. It's enough to give something like a project charm and soul. So we might as well talk about Deadly Premonition, because I think there's something with that where it's made by essentially like a Hideo Kojima type figure called Swery, but I forget what his full name is. His surname is Sekiro. Anyway, and
he only goes by Swery.
Swery Nal.
Yeah,
Weird. There's like Suda51 is a different dude, and Swery is this guy. So there's a lot of Deadly Premonition where it's very much Twin Peaks inspired, and it's your player's this dude called Agent Francis York Morgan, and you arrive in this little Americana town to sort of try and investigate why there's this body that's been found in the trees. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of goes from there, but there's so many quirky, over-the-top, ridiculous characters. It's almost like if you took, you know, the log lady from Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
If you took that idea of, like, everyone has to have a thing and then sort of stretched it out across the entire town, it's that. And so, like, the actual beats of the mystery are, like, fun enough. Like, you're chasing down, like, bits of evidence and doing autopsies and stuff. But it's the weird, really stupid interactions that you have with every single character. And all the dialogue is, like, kind of broken. Some of it's, like, not very well translated.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a guy whose specialist breakfast food is a turkey and strawberry cereal sandwich.
The sinner's sandwich.
That is a sin as well.
I know, right? And so, like, you meet this, his thing, it's, like, what this guy called Mr. Stewart has, and he's, like, wheelchair-bound, but his helper, like, gets this food for him, but that guy only talks in riddles.
And he always ends his sentence with, so says Mr. Stewart.
And, right.
I back this already.
It's so good, man.
I'm invested.
But I don't know why. It's one of those things where Scott and I could sit here and tell you every single, like, singular piece of why this game is insane, but at the same time, that only serves as a reason to play it more, because it's one of those things where, like, it's like water cooler masturbator territory, where you walk around...
Who's masturbating in your water cooler? We have a... Is that the word? What are you talking about?
Listen, the saline saltiness of that water has nothing to do with me.
But the goopy filter...
I've got nothing to do with that.
I'll be ticking the expletive box today.
Keep your foul mouth under control.
Anyway.
It's basically like for those people who enjoy nothing more than going into work the next day and just going, oh, did you see what weird stuff happened here? And that is me and Scott in this case.
I'd never heard water cooler masturbator.
What stereotype are you tapping into?
It was used by, I'm pretty sure it was used by Yahtzee Croshaw in Zero Punctuation as a way to describe people who literally go stand by the water cooler and wait for people to come up to them.
Right.
In American offices, this is obviously meant to be.
I know what he means.
And they come up and they go, and just so that they can go, did you see the weird thing that happened on this show tonight?
I don't know why they talk like this, but I know what you mean. You have the whole thing where it's like a water cooler conversation is always the go-to pop culture conversation topic of the time. So if you try and find that some assumed stereotype of a person that is looking for something off the beaten path, that they're then waiting to then talk about and specialize in talking about something that you haven't heard of.
Yes.
Assumedly.
That's his voice.
I don't know. I know that's the smarmy
man. Give it a try. Take it out for a spin.
Hello, I masturbated in the water cooler.
I'm
Rickman again.
Salty saline.
Somehow you've managed to take something as simple and as quaint as a water cooler masturbator, and you have ruined
it. There's nothing quaint.
It's into Mickey Mouse at the water cooler. Oh, so you want to see it?
Anyway.
Anyway. So, Deadly, 3 in the afternoon, carry on.
Deadly Premonition is a very, very bad game that has an amazing auteur direction.
Yes.
Because of the fact that it's trying to be as off the wall as possible, that it always leaves you with really memorable moments, even though the story itself, if you boil it down, is really simple. It's just like A to B, here's a murderer, oh, here's the explanation, done. Mm. It's, if you were to put it on paper itself, it would still be a fan, like, well, pretty serviceable action horror game. Mm-hmm. But because of the weird moments, you're constantly going to yourself, oh, I'm going to put up with this a lot more. I'm going to keep going with this because I know that something funny or something that is so absurd that becomes funny will happen in the
There's
next
also
10
the whole portion of the game where randomly Agent York will just be beset by zombies and like weird sort of creature looking things. And he just, like, the whole sky goes blood red.
Yeah.
And like, but he doesn't tell anybody. At least, like, that stuff doesn't become like a thing in the story for a long time. Mm-hmm. But he did, like, yeah, that's just a thing that happens for like the first sort of, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours or something. Well, more like half of the game where it turns into like Resident Evil 4. Where it's like, here's some stuff to shoot, and you have a shotgun, a pistol. There's like, it plays like old school Resident Evil, but with the RE4
I'm
the
not
combat.
Really getting where this is bad at this point.
Well, it's not, that's the thing, right?
But okay, so this is the thing. We'll detail why it's bad, and then to give, because like, we have to, because at the moment we're basically just saying this game is great.
I think it is great,
and yeah, it is. But it's a very 0 or 10 out of 10 game.
Yeah.
Like, there doesn't seem to be very much in the middle.
Mm.
The controls are bad.
Yeah.
Like, when you're shooting or running or doing any of the action sequence stuff, it feels like everything that Resident Evil 4 should not be.
Until they brought out the remaster recently, which finally changed the controls. But if you play the original one, you shoot with X. So you're shooting with a face button. So it's like, that feels really weird for one thing. But the controls.
Yeah.
That took me a moment then.
Yeah.
I was like,
it's like
old
school shooting.
It's not a trigger.
It's not. And it's like stuff like that where it controls really weirdly. The animations are very bad. The sound effects are very bad. The script is terrible.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's charming because it's trying. And I don't know if Swery intentionally did all these things to be. I mean, some of them have to have been intentionally bad.
Well, there's one bit.
Like the cereal sandwich.
You know how you and I have discussed many times about fast travel systems and like how you liked when we were playing like Skyrim stuff, you would just be like, oh, I'm just going to go and walk in this direction and just go and it'll be fine. Like, I don't really care about the fast travel thing unless it's absolutely necessary. This is a long, long time ago.
I was going to say, like, throwback that is.
But this game is like, right, you need to go from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get there? And you go, well, I guess I'll take the car then.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you have to go and obey the speed limit.
You don't have to.
You can put the siren on and put it at 10% above the speed limit.
Yes.
You cannot go any further. And your car can run out of fuel.
Yeah.
Aww.
And that happens a lot. So you will be there just driving along, just going, cool, right, run out of fuel. Guess it'll be a 3-hour in real life walk from point A to point B.
You can call a police car to come to your position and then you can take that and drive on. But there are mechanics like that to try and... It's weird because this is the thing that I think it does really well, genuinely really well, but I can't tell if it was intentional or not, is that, like, you see, you'll get a waypoint that's like on the other side of some massive valley and it's like, okay, you need to drive for literally like 10, 15 minutes just driving all the way there. York does talk to himself and he talks about 80s movies and action films and stuff. There's one bit where he breaks down the philosophy, the interdependent relationship between Tom and Jerry, stuff like that, which is great. But the thing that I can't tell if it's genuine or not is that by doing all that stuff, you are then invested in the day-to-day, hour-by-hour life of this detective across the weeks or however long time period it is where he's solving the whole murder. And you can check in at diners and get food and talk to characters and go to the bar and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really immersive and it totally works, even though it's probably just him being like, well... I'll just give you everything, like, you know.
And also, if you don't shave or shower, then people won't respond well to your questioning because you'll be a stinky detective.
Yeah.
Like, you need to take time out of your day to maintain yourself. Like, there are loads of great elements in this game. Like, everything on paper is fantastic. It's just the way that they're put into the game is very janky.
Yeah.
Like, and so you'll find people just going, oh, I don't like having to do this. This is a chore. But
the combat really drags as well.
It
like
does.
Sometimes you go like into like a factory and it's like 3 levels and there's loads of zombies and you're getting chased by this like guy with a hood on and a big axe. And
the
like,
action's there specifically to pad out the game.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
the
yeah.
amount of times you just go like, oh, let me guess, it's another wave of enemies because they literally just like, well, we can't have you rushing through the story too quickly.
Yeah. But like to wrap the Deadly Prem stuff, I think that there's something about the fact that it is clearly trying. And I think there's enough references in the script that I don't know, I love my time with it, and it's like even even though I'm going through it with my wife at the minute, and even though like we get to the bits where the gameplay is really drawn out, like I said, that sequence in the in a factory near the beginning, you know, she went and make like a cup of tea or something. And I was like, I'll just give you a shout when I'm done, because I've been here for ages. But I think overall, it's there's some intrinsic quality to how much he's trying that I think shines through, and I don't know if that's the case because we mentioned some other stuff, like Ashley mentioned Mass Effect Andromeda before we came in, and like I remember when that first came out, like me and Jules had a we did a 45 minute debate on whether it was actually TOS or not, and then the camera ate the card, so it never got to go live. Ooh. But I thought it was better than it was.
I still hate this game.
I think if you chop the Mass Effect title off it, it's a perfectly serviceable sci-fi game.
I would agree with that. I don't
think that is the case, because even if I was to separate myself from the Mass Effect franchise, I'm always looking for likable characters, and in the opening to that, the first two people that you meet in there, is it Liam? And then you meet another human person, but then you meet PB.
I was thinking, as you said it, I was like, oh, it's going to be PB.
Characters aren't very good.
Now, PB is one of the most annoying characters I've experienced.
She just wants to get some artifacts. Look at the remnants.
I think it's like character introductions more than anything. Yeah. Because it's like, okay, cool. We know your character. You're immediately quirky. Okay, you're fun. You're lively.
You could be
a really cool person to have in the group. But why are you here, and why should you suddenly drop everything in your life to come and help me on my quest, even though they are completely unrelated? Oh, because the game says so. That's just bad writing.
A little bit.
Oh, I don't know. I think... I
like the combat, though. The combat was great.
I was going to say, what was it that made you like it?
I just really enjoyed the nostalgia it gave me. I think that it was, as much as I say you chop the Mass Effect game, Mass Effect name off and you'll get a perfectly serviceable sci-fi game, I thought all of the colours and shades of Mass Effect that were in there made me have a really wholesome, nice time. Like, it was, again, padded out beyond belief with things that didn't need to be in there. So yes, it isn't a great game. It's not the best game, and it gets slated even more because it is a Mass Effect game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think all the things that were in there, I stuck with it the whole way through, and I wanted to see the story, and I wanted to do all these different things and learn about these people and have the Mass Effect experience. And I feel like it delivered that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, as much as it's not my favorite Mass Effect game or one of my favorite games ever or anything, I still think it deserves defending a bit because it does do things right, if not perfectly.
Mm. I remember liking the combat at the time. The thing that I defended at the time was that I totally agree with you, Jules, that the characters are very bad. It's very like millennial writing 101, where everyone's like, everything is a punchline, everything is a joke, nothing has any weight to it whatsoever.
It seems very inspired by Joss Whedon. Like, yes, totally. It's like, Whedon-esque dialogue where it's like, that's fine. It's a very tactile and smart way of writing, but only if your characters have difference. Mm-hmm. If every character is the funny one, then none of them are the funny one.
Yeah,
it's the syndrome situation.
Mm-hmm. But the combat is really good, like genuinely good. Yeah. Like, I mean, it probably is the best Mass Effect combat has ever been, like, especially all the aerial stuff that you can do and everything. But I think it's worth, like, what was it about that that, like, I guess
it's nostalgia,
it shines through.
It's what I think for games that I think that I am drawn to, which are, like, bad games that I still like anyway, are nostalgia ones. Mm. Like, I like the Shrek 2 game. I like Shrek. I liked the Catwoman game as well, from the really bad
Jesus.
Catwoman movie.
I never played that.
This was me playing them as a kid. Like, right. I'd, like, disclaimer, this was me
when
playing
When was
the
last
kid.
Time you played that?
That was when I was a kid. Okay. So, like, it was a good few years ago now. Uh-huh. But I loved them. I thought they were great. I just loved being in a film and enjoying the game, like, even if they were really crap gameplay and, like, nothing very good to do. I was like, hey, look, it's me and Shrek, old buddy, old pal. And me and Puss in Boots doing, like, a little, like, fight dance with Puss in Boots. I just had a great time and had a real laugh with them, and I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought of a game that would actually fit this bill that you actually told me about, and I remember that I played, and it's... I can never remember the name of it. You play as a woman, and she's a Viking. She rides a dragon.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. You're talking about Drakkar the Ancient Dragon.
Okay, that is a perfect 6 or 7 out of 10.
No. That's rated highly across the board. If you go and look that up, and you look on its pages, it's called Drakkar the Ancient Gates.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It is the most underrated PS2 game ever. I think it
algorithmically
was like,
generated fantasy loom.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
But it's not at the same time.
No, like, it is.
It's like, because I went and played it like with my mate Mark a couple of years ago, and we were playing it and just felt like the combat is really wonky. Everything's janky in it. But the story, as you keep saying, because that's the thing, is really impressive.
Rin and her dragon as well. The way they talk to each other. You're like,
The dialogue between those two is actually really, really good. Yeah. But apart from that, I was just kind of like, the graphics are really bad.
Oh,
like,
yeah, but it's a PS2 game. I know, it's supposed to be a bit chunky.
I'll let you know that that's on a 78% on Metacritic.
I know, I told you.
8.1 from IGN.
I looked it up because I thought, hey, one of my favourite games ever, let's see if it's trash. I was like, it's not, thank God. Like,
looking at the box art, I do remember that thing now. Miss that time period, and especially on the PS2, when budgets were just relaxed enough that a lot of publishers would greenlight more ideas. Not everything was as like, you know, like strangleholded to be like, it needs to be the best-selling thing ever.
This is where I thrived. My upbringing was on crap PS2 games, and I was just like, oh, like the cover of that, I'll give it a go. Vex as well, you brought up Vex as one that wasn't like a brilliant game, but I loved that. Loved it.
I loved having the ability to take your pocket money and actually just go to like a secondhand PS2 PS1 thing and just go like, oh, I can buy like 3 games that I've never heard of because there are so many of them and they all tank. Mm-hmm. Like,
I think obviously it's just the way that the industry is gone, but like I said, it's like budgets have inflated to the point where loads of publishers want to ensure that they get their money back, so it's like, okay, use this bankable formula and use this, use that. But I missed that sort of hotbed of creativity that I feel the PS2 was.
Yeah.
And just like, I don't know if it was back, if it was the console sales that allowed for it as well. PS2 is like the highest selling thing ever and whatever. But like, I just, there was such a variety of games and IPs and stuff like back then. And even something like Draken, once you look at the artwork, it's like, oh yeah, I do remember that. Like it did do the rounds.
Around that time, PS1, PS2, that sort of era was when the video game industry was kind of like the film industry used to be in the late 60s and early 70s, where you had loads of studios willing to take. What they did was they put like loads of small budget films out in hopes that one of them would make it, make their money back for the rest of them. And that's what they did with like the publishing side of like video games as well. And we got to experience so many crazy cool stuff, but also a ton of crap as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, I kind of want to do something eventually on the realities of like, like what allowed all those games to come true. But I miss that. Like I miss that, the variety of it. Jules, you mentioned you wanted to talk about Psychic Force, which I vaguely remember.
No idea on this one.
Oh, cast your mind back to the day, the heady days of the PS1 and fighting games were everywhere. Yep. Everyone and their dead nan's dog had one. And like, woof indeed. And amongst them was Psychic Force. And I remember this one because I went over to my gran's once and she was like, oh, your dad's been over and he's dropped off some games for you. And Psychic Force was the top of the pile with a classic $6.99 sticker on. And looking back at it now, I think my dad was ripped off by about £5. So like, it's...
Very quickly, do you know what that got on IGN?
I want to go really low. 5-4
Five is bang on.
Yeah.
5 out of 10 game. Carry on.
5-4
But I will totally defend this game as being something that everyone should at least play once, because it's got the territories of so bad it's good about it, mm-hmm. but actually a really interesting concept. It's a 3D fighting game where you fight inside of a cube, but every single fighter has like magical psychic powers, which means that you can like back away from your opponent, use these psychic powers, and use the 3D space to like avoid them and like dodge out of the way. And my favorite character was a guy, oh God, I can't remember what his name was, but Jeff. It's he had white hair like Dante. And he had a
smile on your face.
I love Dante so much.
Like he's remembering a former lover. and he wore like a classic sort of emo leather full bound chain strap things. Okay. And his power was gravity. And his ability was he would cast a black hole in the center of the stage and pull everything into it. I love that.
That you mentioning that reminds me of, because I just Googled like a couple of separate, because there was so many random PS1 beat 'em ups trying to get in on like Tekken and everything else. I don't know if you guys played Bloody Roar. I know that
Bloody Roar
well.
Was class,
but
man.
Bloody Roar was great. And then I remember Evil Zone as well, but that was
amazing. No, see, I never played
Evil Zone. Evil Zone's kind of similar to, you said, just like standard stock 3D fighter, but with like a cool cast of characters. But I feel like they were trying to get in on the beat 'em up wave.
It was the era of gimmick fighters. Yeah. It was like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and all the ones, the big named ones, they did the sort of like straight up like pugilism. Mm-hmm. Everything else had to have like, well, let's just chuck some of this in there.
Yeah.
Like, have you played Eternal Fantasia, I think it's called?
I've heard of it.
It's imagine a cell-drawn high fantasy steampunk game.
Sorry, how many words can you
I know.
Into this?
And when you
doing the YouTube
tags, when you do damage, you deal HP damage, as in like it like pops up on the over them, like it's basically like a turn-based fighting game, but in real time. Mm. It's really cool.
A turn-based fighting game in real time.
That's the only way to describe it. I feel like
you've made this up. Like, no, how many words can I find for this? And what can I describe it as? Eternal, and does it exist?
Amazing RPG cool. time. That's good. What was it about Psychic Force that made you bring it back up, though?
It was just the opening cinematics. Right. Today, as what's the date today? The 2nd?
I don't know.
3rd of February? I don't know. I checked my watch.
It doesn't have the 3rd of February.
Okay, well, yes. Sony tweeted out a thing saying, what amazing opening cinematics do you remember? And immediately, after seeing that tweet, I thought of Psychic Force because it was all hand-drawn anime opening, because I think at one point it was meant to have a coinciding TV show as well. They went down that route. And what stuck in my mind is it ran through all of the characters, all of the big bads. You got your guy, main guy called Johnny Blaze, who was like, had this big, like, coiffured mohawk, and he had a phoenix of flame for his special power.
It's on Cartoon Network. Like, this is honestly, right, this doesn't sound real.
But the best thing was, is that guess what the bad guy was called? Like, his power was ice, because obviously he had to go against the thing.
Oh, okay.
Just have a wild guess.
Iceman?
Well, if he's called Johnny Blaze, then he has to be called something like
Jimmy
an ice.
Right? Yeah, Jimmy like, Frost. Okay, Ned Jack Frost.
Oh! No, it is even worse than that. His name is, drum roll please.
Good.
Keith.
Well, not even a surname.
Nope, just
Keith.
I think it's like Keith Blackburn or
Keith
something like that.
Coming at
you.
Okay, cool. Just normal old Keith.
But I just
Keith
love the fact that it's like we must all team together to stop the legendary Keith.
That must be a mistranslation or something. Like,
no, man, I swear not.
No one sets out to call their villain Keith.
Yeah, unless, you do if you're a Big Banter, though. And yeah. Maybe they must have known what they had on their hands.
I don't know if they knew what Big Banter was.
Shoot Gunner would argue differently.
It's true, but Kojima's Big Banter and he knows that he is. Although back then he probably
wasn't. I've literally just said the same thing for this
guy. But I don't
leave
think,
Keith alone.
No, but they've gone with Johnny Blaze and then they couldn't think of anything, so they went with Keith.
I love it, though. That's funny. It was just like every time you're like, he summons like an ice dragon that clears the screen, he's like, Keith! That's so good.
The worst fighting game that I used to love, I played it recently and found out it was trash, so it doesn't really apply here, which was Fight Box on PS2. And
Fight Box?
Literally just called Fight Box, and you fight in a box.
That sounds like you're making that up.
Honestly, it's so, like, I had like vivid memories of playing as this like tiger person, because you like pick their arms, their legs, their torso and their head, and you can like put it all together and make a fighter and then fight. And it's like trying to wade through treacle, like fight.
Like,
so
really
you throw
slow.
A punch and it'd be like, choo!
No.
And then trying to like dodge and be like, ah! But so I played it again, realised it was crap, but I had vivid memories of loving it and making this tiger person, and now I feel like I made it up and I'm thinking of King instead.
But what, like, from
Tekken? Yeah, yeah.
But I don't remember a game called Fight Box, but I love the simplicity of calling it that.
I'm going to look it up real quick and just make sure.
Did you guys ever play the Clay Fighter games?
No, but weren't they meant to be some of the worst?
Oh, they are abysmal.
I think on N64 wasn't very good.
The best one, because they had the cleverly titled Clay Fighter 63 and 3/3, or so 3/3. That was their way of being like, oh, it's not quite 64.
Though. I remember that thing. I was going to mention, like for some of the closing stuff, whether like controls ever get in the way when you go back to stuff like that.
Oh, unbelievable.
Like, obviously, control
with
schemes.
Fightbox, yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, like, control schemes, like, you know, advance and change so much across generations. But like, I just got Doom 64, and like, obviously, I didn't think of this, which is really obvious when I was ordering it, but obviously the N64 doesn't have a second analog stick. Mm-mm. So there's no, you can't look around. So you kind of just strafe on L and R and just move with the middle stick or whatever it is, and then shoot with the back trigger, which like I actually quite like now that I've got used to it, but like obviously it's completely different. But I've seen a lot of people, like Doom 64's reputation is like, oh God, don't play it, it's on the N64. I'm having a blast with it. I don't know if that's ever the case with you guys.
I mean, GoldenEye 64, yeah, you go back and play it using the N64 controller. Do not like it.
I like it. You got to zoom in and then move more.
But it's only because of the fact that I've been spoiled like the rest of us with dual analog sticks. Mm-hmm. Like that changed the game as soon as they came out. So when you're playing
quite
with...
Quite literally.
Yeah.
So when
you're playing with like one where you've got to like go... it doesn't really work.
I don't know if you guys played Oni on the PS2. It was like a purple head warrior woman, and it was made by Bungie and Rockstar.
No.
Wait a minute.
Back in like 2000.
Heard the name. Some of them have heard the name.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Otter Guy. That is
very,
cool.
Very close.
Very similar. Oni and Otter Guy.
I remember Oni. Oni had the front cover of it was the purple haired woman with the red logo on a white background.
It was purple, but yes.
Damn.
Near enough. But that game though was like, third person action thing, and like they were going for like you can do like cool slides and machine guns, you can disarm people and kick off the walls, like Matrix style thing. And I loved that as well. But that game, I went back to that because I rented it and it was horrendous. No, it wasn't very good. But that was one of the first games that had the dual analog stick thing. And I remember when that came into the industry and how much of like a complete mind breaker it was to like try and use both sticks at the same time.
Imagine when we're using four in the future.
Oh, I don't want that.
Imagine on the toes as well.
We're using none.
Yeah, when you're using your eyeballs to shoot, one turning one way and one turning the other to control it. Oh.
It's not good. But in regards to like control stuff, like do you factor that in when you go back to stuff, or is it like, oh, okay, I know what I'm in for. Like this is gonna feel bad.
It depends.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite taken aback for some reason, even though I played the game to death when I played the Onimusha remake.
Oh,
like because it's
tank controls.
Yeah, it's going back to tank controls, and I was just like, in my mind, I was remembering it in a much more sort of like fluid fighting system, and then when I came back to it, I was like, oh, whoa, this is quite stunted, but it's still great.
It's like Onimusha, I adore, but like the because that came from the whole Resident Evil 4, like they were trying to make Resident Evil 4, so they prototyped a bunch of different stuff. One of them became Devil May Cry, the other one became what became RE4, and then something else became Onimusha. Mm. And I remember at the time not thinking that at all, but when you go back to it, it's like, this is totally the Resident Evil engine with like random swords and stuff to try and get more out of it. Ash, I realized that you've discovered Fightbox.
It exists.
It is real. I recognize that cover now that
I've
seen
it. Do you? Yes, yeah. It's got a man with a tiger face on who also exists and isn't King, but it's not a tiger. It's just a horrifying freak show. But I don't know what it is. It was an awful game, but it's rated 4.5 on Amazon.
It looks like the sort of precursor to the companion cube from Valve.
It's not a good look. What made you want to go back to it?
I remembered loving it so much. I remember playing it all the time. That and Robot Wars, I used to love. Like, were the two games you used to play on my PS2 when it was a fighting game.
Love didn't get you through it this time.
No, because the controls were crap. I remembered it differently and then played it and was like, wow, this does not live up to what I thought it did.
I felt the same way about the PS1 Beyblade game. After us,
Beyblade.
After we were joking about it, because was it like a couple of weeks ago when I just said, how is Beyblade doing? And we started Googling.
Oh,
like,
you look at the Beyblade fights?
And so this is the thing, it has moved on so much since
I've never seen Beyblade, so.
Right, well, let it rip, brother. And basically,
you don't want me to do that.
No, I don't. No,
please,
no, he doesn't.
Not in this confined space.
Well, basically, in the PS1, back in the day, you were like watching the cartoon and watching all of these crazy like moves being happening. And
are you not too old for Beyblade? Because I am.
Of course I am.
Yeah. We're on a video game channel.
No, but Beyblade's
But I'm not saying I'm picking it back up again.
No, but usually, what I mean is usually it's associated with like you or Ewan because they're way smaller and younger and we're old.
My sister actually liked Beyblade more than I did. Right. There's a 8 or 9 year difference. Uh-huh. I should know that. She was like, oh, I really like this PlayStation 1 game. And I played it with her and it was basically like Football Manager meets a fighting simulator. Mm. Weird game. Mm. Like you would build your own Beyblade and then you would simulate the battle, you would have minimal control over what it did in the thing. But at the time, I was like, this is really quite complex and pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we worked together to build the best thing. So I've got great memories of that game. Mm-hmm. But then I went back to play it recently after watching a friend like talking about it on his channel. And I was just like,
this is utter bollocks. Why would I ever want to play a management game on a kid's TV show when it should just be like, smash it, absolutely destroy it. That's what it should have been.
Yeah. I don't know what the last time was they did a Beyblade game, but if they did one with modern tech, assumedly it would be way better. Like, Dragon Ball's come along so far.
Imagine the VR of doing the, like, pulling the
rip
cord.
Let it rip.
I would be totally down for
was
that,
its
man.
Catchphrase literally, let it rip?
Yeah, dude.
They didn't realise the connotations.
Well, no, they
that
wanted to repurpose the phrase.
You can't claim it when because it's a legendary phrase.
It just rip off the string as well, go, and then it spins off. It does a little spin. Who can last the longest? Is it Dark Unicorn or Red Flaming
Pokemon,
Johnny Fringe, whatever his name was?
Well,
Johnny Blaze.
I'll have you know that it was Tyson with Dronza. That was there. I don't actually know. It's Dragoon, actually.
Oh, there we go.
God, hardcore Beyblade fan.
That was the weirdest thing about it. That all they had like spirits inside of the thing that came out like Pokemon and attacked each other. But they all began with DR for some reason. So it's like Dronza, Dragoon, Drasil. And I was like, why? Like,
powerful.
Because it's a thing. Let it rip. Use the DR. I don't know. Apparently it worked.
I will not sit here and listen to you.
You can and you will.
On let
I
it rip.
Hate this slash.
Now it's recorded and going out to the, I was going to say millions, the potential thousands, but
going
we'll
out
find
to
out.
My mom.
Yeah. listening loyally at home.
Do Tamagotchis count as video games?
Yes.
Then those also count as bad.
I had so many of them. I had the World Cup 1998 one with the little bird.
Oh, just the little egg ones. I used to love looking after those so much. And like Nintendogs, I used to love looking after animals on like online.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what, in Pokemon Go now, you can summon, there's a whole buddy system. So like you can summon your like loyal, like the buddy that you've got and you can feed it. Like where it's right in front of you in like AR and you can feed it and you take, I'm walking my Charizard up and down the hill.
Aww.
It's so good. I absolutely love it. Got nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I like it a lot.
But I have seen that AR thing that you're talking about and it's so utterly terrifying when Snorlax gets up and charges towards the screen and you're like, oh, stop, go away,
like, actually to bring it all back around, that initial version of Pokemon Go, the one that was like pretty much broken, was one that took off the most and was the one that we all played, so I guess that encapsulates why we play something that's potentially terrible.
Nostalgia again.
It's good
Tamagotchis because you're like, it throws you back to the looking after things sort of stuff game genre that exists.
Looking after stuff game genre.
Have I ever told you about the sad tale of my Tamagotchi?
You can. We only have like 2 minutes.
Go on, then. I'll do it very quickly.
Okay.
So I had this Tamagotchi. It was a yellow one with blue buttons. I remember that distinctively. And I remember saving up to buy it for like myself. And it was like, you know, when you're a kid and you buy something for yourself, it means much more to you. Mm-hmm. Took care of it for absolutely ages. My mum said, right, we're going to go for a nice family trip to the beach in the evening. It was in the summer. We all went down to this tiny like beach and I wasn't allowed to bring it with me because she was sick of the noises it was making. So we had to put it in the glove box of the car.
Good.
And I said to her, if I don't feed it, it's going to die. And she was there like, what? Like, as an adult, I understand.
It's not real, Jules.
It's like, what are you on about? So she left it in there, and lo and behold, had a great time at the beach, came back, opened it up, and it was dead. I was devastated at that time. And I was still like, oh. And my mum was just like, she bought me a new one because she thought that the game was over. Like, if it was dead, I couldn't do it again. So she went and bought me a new one. I was like, thanks, Mum.
When you said it was a story, I thought it was going to be like an ending bit. This is just sad.
That is the ending. Sometimes the endings are just sad, like the end of this podcast.
Where's the zing? Where's the zing? Where's the spice?
That's what I asked your mum.
Oh. Good. I'm going to do a sign-off thing. Here's the spice.
Wendy.
It's the end of the podcast. So yeah, let us know anything down in, I was going to say, the comments. There's no comments. Come find us on social media. Now, we had an idea to put a hashtag out so people can leave some questions and different bits and bobs, and we can read stuff out in future podcasts. So I think for now, we'll use the hashtag WCGP, and we'll try and keep an eye on that. So anything that you want to send in that you would like us to talk about or questions you would like answered, use that hashtag.
What are your terrible games that you loved as a kid?
Yes, you can follow up on things like that. I want to know about more Deadly Premonition love.
Tamagotchis.
But yeah, for now, that's been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Goodbye.
And Jules Gill.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye. I love that. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.